All right, everyone, welcome back. Today, I have with me a very, very special guest. So today, I have with me Rand Fishkin, who is the founder of Moz, the inbound marketing SEO software company based in Seattle, Washington. I'm super excited to have Rand because not only is he a great entrepreneur, I've learned a ton from him. You know, Moz is super well known in the SEO and the digital marketing space. Plus, Rand has that amazing hair. But also, I'm privileged to call Rand a friend. I've known Rand for a number of years now, six and a half years. I've known you like personally, starting when I was at Distilled in New York, and you know, and then moving on just kind of through different different periods. So, Rand, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being a friend and for all that Moz has done, you know, for me and for so many others. If you would just, could you introduce yourself briefly? Tell us who you are, what you're working on, and all that good stuff.
Oh, sure. Well, John, right back at you. It's been a privilege and a pleasure having both, you know, the professional contact that we've had over the years, and also the friendship. And I know that you may not feel this way, but I think that you've done a lot for a lot of people in this industry. And yeah, I think in the end, that is what matters the most.
So thank you.
Yeah. As an introduction, so yeah, I founded the company Moz. It was originally SEO Moz. In its early days, it was a consulting firm, transitioned to software. And for its first 7 years as a software company from 2007 to 2014, I was the CEO as well as the founder. And then over the last 3.5 years, I transitioned my role to an individual contributor. And actually, in a few months here, I'm going to be leaving the company. And I state that it is, let's see, I'm not exactly sure how to categorize it. Let's say it's semi-voluntary, semi-involuntary.
Okay.
And I think, you know, that journey is one that many, many founders of software businesses and tech companies that get venture backing go through, where they're, you know, the founder and CEO, and then eventually they, either by their own choice or by the, you know, choice of their investors or controlling parties, are no longer CEO. In my case, it was completely my choice. Mm-hmm. And then many of them, you know, leave their company. So my plans ahead, so I have a book coming out next year called Lost and Founder.
Nice.
From the folks at Penguin Random House. Yeah, thank you. And that's been a mountain of work, but actually really, really enjoyable work. And I also am starting a new company, name to be determined, mission to be determined, everything to be determined. But hope to announce that probably in the new year.
Awesome. Well, that's, I mean, all super exciting things. Obviously, you know, it's never fun leaving, you know, leaving something that you started, I'm sure. You know, in my case, I got laid off, and I've talked to many other people that have gotten laid off. And, you know, it's definitely kind of a, it can be a wake up call, but it can also be one of the best things that ever happens to you. You know, I look back now 2 years on and I'm like, yeah, that is 100% the best thing that ever, you know, could have happened to me. Still hurts to this day a little bit. Right. But.
I think that it's an odd conundrum, knowing that something that is good for you and potentially, you know, fingers crossed, my God, I mean, Geraldine and I still own almost a quarter of Moz, right? We're the largest single shareholders. Geraldine's my wife, for those of you watching. Mm-hmm. And so certainly I have every, you know, both financial and personal pride reason to hope and believe that Moz will do well. And I'll continue to be the chairman of the board over there. But yeah, it stings, right? It hurts. And it's weird having that, you know, holding these two competing thoughts in your head. This is the right thing. And this also feels bad.
Right. Totally. Yeah. And as we were chatting about before we even started recording, you know, you started the company. I mean, you joined your mom's like web dev company, and then y'all really got like SEO Moz going. And then I know Jillian, your mother, transitioned out of the company, and you did the CEO thing, and now you've been through a lot of stuff. But I mean, along the way, you know, you've built a ton of amazing relationships with people in the industry, right? Like I look back at, you know, the marketing team that you had in place at Moz in like 2011, 2012, 2013, like, I mean, like Joanna Lord, who's CMO of ClassPass, you know, Casey Henry, who's, you know, been at HubSpot and Wistia, and I think is doing his own thing now.
I think
Andrew
he's actually
Dumont,
at
right?
UCLA. He's back in Seattle at
Back at
UCLA.
UCLA in Seattle, right? Who Jamie Stevens, right? So
Jamie
Jamie
Stevens.
used to be he used to be at Moz. It was the I think is still the VP marketing CMO over there, something like that.
I believe he's now the CEO, actually.
CEO, see? Big, big things like, you've connected with all these amazing people and those, and those relationships. And so I mean, the original thing I approached you about with, for this conversation was talking about growing Moz through, through conferences was really like the big thing. But I think what would be great to talk about is actually growing a company through the relationships that you have. And there are a lot of different ways to look at that. We were actually talking about San Francisco and how San Francisco feels very transactional these days. And me living there, it took me 2.5 years to find some good, deep, like tech friendships. So talk to me about like, that journey and kind of how you think about, building a business, like how you built Moz, but then also like moving into your next thing. Obviously you have a much larger platform now than you had when you started Moz, but numbers in that case don't really mean much. You have a little bit more reach, but like the people that are actually going to help you out, people that are actually going to be with you through it, are not, some random part of those, 350,000 people that follow you on Twitter, right? There's maybe like 100, 150 there that you would actually reach out to. You'd be like, oh yeah, I know that person personally, and I'll, ask them for their opinion on my new business. So yeah, I'd love your take on, on that and how you've built Moz differently than other businesses have been built, other venture-backed businesses off the back of, a lot of relationships, but then also moving forward, what are you focusing on?
Yeah, so I think this started early on in my career when we were a consulting firm, and I found that the conversations around sales were deeply uncomfortable and felt very inauthentic to me. And because of that experience, the transition to software, where essentially I could say, hey, all I want to do is help people. I want to help as many people as I can, as much as I can, and if they happen to find the software that we use, which is our own stuff, to be useful for this purpose, well, they can subscribe and use it too. And I think that turned out to be a really great way to go. And John, you're probably very familiar with this because you've been in the subscription business, software as a service world for a while now. But one of the things that's really interesting about that is if you play in SaaS or in subscription business, and you are serving a small to medium business customer, right? Someone who is an independent entrepreneur or an independent consultant or at a small agency or at, or in-house at a firm, at a company between, say, 0 to a couple hundred people. Churn tends to be extremely high. That's both institutional churn and churn due to budget reasons and churn due to turnover. If you're, if you're targeting enterprises, which the vast majority of software as a service and subscription businesses that are venture backed have tried to target over the last decade, decade and a half, that churn rate tends to be dramatically lower. And but the relationship is built on sales. And so I think Moz was almost a pioneer in this world, especially, our first decade, almost a pioneer in this world of self-service software as a service. And in that world, building personal relationships based on wanting to help people and just generally having a lot of love and care for people, which is, for folks who know me, right? That's just who I am. If we hang out, I want to help you. I want to help you find your next job. I want to help you, find your next date. I want to help you, make your life better. Help you find a house. Help you go on vacation somewhere amazing, whatever it is, right? Like that's
It's
just who I
you.
am. That's what powers me personally and emotionally. And those relationships turned into a brand amplification for Moz that was incredibly powerful. And I think obviously we took advantage of a lot of high reach channels. So early in our days, it was the blog. And then a Q&A forum, And then so certainly we were early adopters of social media across many platforms and email newsletters, the Moz Top 10, which is extremely popular, right? And distribution mechanisms like this. And then a lot of free stuff too. So I think we took that ethos of relationship building and said, how do we apply that to software? Well, let's offer a free toolbar for Chrome and Firefox. Let's offer lots of free tools that people can then upgrade to. Let's offer lots of free content. And so you sort of get this marketing machine moving without having to invest in transactional sales-driven relationships.
Yeah, totally. Well, and the amazing thing about that is, I mean, those and we can look back now. I know you guys were pioneering it, you know, a decade, 8, 10 years ago with Mozbar and all those different things. But you know, now we look back and you know, all the like startups are talking about like, you know, building something people love, right? I mean, they're talking about it as growth hacks. Like you didn't think about it that way. It was just like, this is what our people need, right? I mean, when you look at it now, it's like that's actually a pretty freaking awesome growth hack, like a growth like channel for you potentially, right? But you just built something that was useful out of a need that you saw.
And the way so preview, you know, sneak preview, potential spoiler for my book. There's a whole chapter in the book that's all about this sort of flywheel method of marketing versus growth hacking, right? And growth hacking is sort of like, let me find this one tactic that I think will transform our growth curve and get us, you know, way more adoption of users or paying customers or subscribers, whatever it is. And for us, what I've found with actually every single company, not just ours, but every company I've ever helped or talked to or advised or consulted with, is that the growth hack. So I think, you know, I've often been very critical of the concept and the terminology around growth hack, but I think I've come around to the notion it's not evil or bad or wrong. It's just often misused and thought about poorly. So the way,
Short-sighted too.
it can be short-sighted. So the way I think about it is basically you want to build a flywheel in your marketing, right? A set of channels and practices that scale with decreasing friction, right? Which is what a flywheel is designed to do. It holds on to energy and the more it turns, right? The inertia carries it through. That's what you want with your marketing. You don't want to have to invest, you know, as much effort and energy in, say, your blog or your Facebook ads or, you know, your podcast in, you know, month 18 as you did in month one. Month one, everything was a slog. It was so hard. But I think once you find flywheels that work and that scale with that decreasing friction, then if you can identify what the individual points of friction that are holding back the flywheel from turning, you know, from making those revolutions, from having that success, that's where a growth hack is hugely valuable, right? So
Totally.
we talked briefly about the Moz Bar. Moz Bar is a great example of a growth hack, right? It's a essentially, hey, we want to distribute software tools for free. We recognize that people have this challenge around, you know, looking at lots of SEO-focused issues in their browser, view sources a pain in the ass, inspect elements a pain in the ass. There's a few toolbars out there that can sort of substitute, but SEOs had to install like 18 of them at the time to get all the things they needed, right? And so what if we
And
could
then Chrome
provide
doesn't work. Yeah.
that? Oh my God. And then the browser conflicts and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, amazing.
Right. So like, what if we could offer that for free? Oh, well, that's sort of a growth hack to get the distribution of our software and our metrics, which was a friction point at the time in our flywheel, turning faster and smoother. And so we applied this growth hack in the form of a product, but a free product. And that was extremely successful. I think Mozbar is installed on like 400,000 plus browsers. It's our most popular product by like
Unreal.
10x.
I think I'm personally responsible for like 8 of those. So, yeah,
I
that's, I mean,
shouldn't say users. You know,
right,
oh, look
browsers.
at John Doherty, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
Yeah,
and 7.
exactly. Yeah, I mean, you gotta test them on, gotta test it on everything, right? Yeah, and I think that's I love the way you state that about like marketing is, and I think I actually got it from Will Critchlow, who may have gotten it from you, or I don't know, these terminologies get passed around, but like I also talk about, you know, the flywheel where your first like pushing it, and then eventually it starts spinning. And you can almost think about it as like a snowball. Like you're pushing a ball up a hill, right? And it's hard and it's getting bigger, especially like right near the top. It's really hard. The snowball's huge. But once you get over that crest, then you're just like running to keep up with it. And then, and I guess it breaks down with like, greasing that wheel, right, to make it go even faster. But I think that distribution, like that distribution side is something people don't really talk about. And I actually think it's interesting how, you can do it with software, you can do it with, the Moz bar, you can do it with, I know you guys have had different like various like free trials, over time, and you can do like run like link reports on three sites logged out on OpenSite Explorer, all that sort of stuff to, yeah, it gets
The
people
premium
like
on,
in the
yeah.
door, but it also like for some people, like the hobbyists, they just need to audit, look at the links of one website, right? And so you're just genuinely being useful to them. But it's also interesting to me how you've also taken relationships and helped that be kind of a distribution method, for Moz. Not in a like, I'm gonna do this so that you can promote my company sort of way, but genuinely in like, I'm gonna be helpful to you. Like I think it's fascinating how, I mean, obviously when Moz transitioned out of consulting into software, Distilled took a bunch of the clients, and y'all Moz partnered with Distilled, I believe, like officially, on that, and I know that greatly helped Distilled grow, but then also Distilled and different various agencies through the years, and still are also huge promoters of Moz, right? So I think one of the most brilliant things you guys did was having like the group of agencies and such that would blog, that would write on the Moz blog, every week, right? Like I know Distilled had every Monday. I think someone else had every Tuesday. Like you were doing Whiteboard Fridays and writing a lot more. But you not only like that, those relationships then increased the visibility of Moz. It also increased the visibility of those agencies. But that was all built through relationships through conferences. Is that fair to say?
Close to. I don't know that everything was conferences and events, but certainly, if I had to guess, I would say the majority of those are formed through personal relationships. And, this is odd in a digital era where we're talking about digital publishing to say, why, Rand, is it that you had to meet someone in person before you'd form a relationship and let them publish on your platform and those kinds of things? I mean, obviously, I don't think I've ever met anyone from Forbes, and yet everyone I know has published on their website, right? And
So
so,
true. Yep.
that it sounds like an odd model. And for us, I think the reason that it worked so well is because it gave us a high signal to noise ratio, right? Essentially, we could do a lot of filtration by, I hear someone speak at a conference, or I meet them and they have very intelligent questions and comments and powerful experiences. And I think to myself, gosh, I'd really love to have that person share that experience on the Moz blog. Let me invite them. And once you've built up, once we had built up a platform that could be helpful to folks in their career and for their, for whatever it is, for their agency, for their software or their tools or whatever it was that they were doing in the digital marketing world, we had this powerful sort of currency, right? Exchange currency, where we could say, hey, why don't you contribute something? And in exchange, you get all this visibility. And that was, yeah, that was a wonderful tool. I think that is a challenging thing to do, right? To become sort of the center or one of the centers of your industry through publishing. But it was something, something I had a natural predilection for and something that I, obviously spent many years building up even as a consulting firm, so that when we transitioned to software, it was a point of leverage for us.
Totally. Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's the old like, look at what's working, right? So in your case, like, and also what you enjoy doing. So in your case, it was blogging. Like you're getting, a lot of consulting clients. So you guys had some ginormous clients that you've talked about publicly in the past, I ostensibly off the back of, I mean, some up relationships and personal referrals, I'm sure, but others from like, they read what you're writing about and they're like, oh, I need that thing. What they have to offer.
And the interesting part was, early on in the SEO world, certainly when I first started writing, a huge portion of the SEO world was very secretive and intentionally so, right? There was this underlying belief that, hey, this is our special thing that we understand and know. Let's not share it out there. If we do share what we know, people will be able to apply it themselves. They won't come to us. We'll lose our competitive advantage. We'll lose our business. And so, I don't know if you remember, but like the early years of the Moz blog, we made as many enemies as friends,
Yes,
right?
and
Like
hate.
there was a lot of people who seriously disliked us for sharing that information. For a
And
while
still
there,
do.
yeah, some people, less so now, right?
Fewer.
Because it's
That's good.
become such a common tactic now, I think, for people to share openly that, that the hate has sort of drifted away.
Okay.
But even Google was very frustrated for a while. I remember those, get some late night email from Matt Cutts because he's pissed off that I wrote about something or spoke about something at a conference or invited someone else to speak about something at a conference or
No, man.
whatever it was, right? And we had this constant fear for years that he was going to ban us from Google, how that would affect our business. But thankfully,
Never
he
did.
never did.
Interesting. Well, it's also like, I mean, so that's, I mean, I love that you were able to build your business through those sorts of relationships and really focusing on that like signal over noise. And it's interesting to me though, because I mean, yeah, I've been running a business that has catered somewhat to SMBs. I still like love helping SMBs find a good agency or consultant to work with for my own for my business's health. I have had to go a little bit more enterprise, or at least like change the model a little bit, not working with different businesses, but charge a bit more. But that's all driven like via relationships, and you can't have like personal in-depth relationships with 45,000 customers that Moz has, right? So as someone that that ran a company like that with tens of thousands of subscribers, how did you think about you personally as ran the person and ran the entrepreneur? And I mean, you're like the Energizer Bunny. Like you do so much, and I see you get tired as well. I know you get tired.
Yeah,
I've
oh, I
stayed at your
do.
house. I know you get tired. But how do you as ran the entrepreneur think about those relationships and kind of like investing down into into people? Going back to the San Francisco, like everything is so transactional. Like how do you personally think about that? I know you have people that you're close with, like Will Reynolds, and people like that you become very close with. But like how do you draw those lines? Like, let's talk about it on like the entrepreneur, like personal side now.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a. I think I have a few sort of healthy, I hope healthy, barriers that I put up to try and do that. So, I have kind of a routine about health and sleep, especially the last few years since I had depression a number of years ago, which you might recall, and that has been very helpful in sort of maintaining a semblance of control over my own life and health, right? Mental health, emotional health, and physical health too. And then
They
I think that,
all go in together.
oh my God, it's disturbing how much they're connected and
It is. It is.
how poorly, I don't want to say poorly understood. I think the medical science community understands this very well, but the rest of us, I don't know why that message has not resonated particularly well. But for in terms of building those relationships, I would say that one of the things that I do is just try and show as much kindness as I can to as many people as I possibly can, whenever and wherever I can. But also have what I'd say are like a healthy ability to say no, right? So, if you look at my email inbox, you will see that, there's between, and the number has decreased, especially since, Sarah sort of announced this summer that I would be leaving Moz. The number's gone down, not massively, but substantively, probably 30%. So now I'm probably down to maybe between 40 and 50 requests from people per day to do something, right? Will you share this thing? Will you read this thing? Will you help introduce me to investors? Will you, take a look at my company pitch? Will you whatever? And so I've gotten good at sort of saying like, here's a resource, but I don't have the bandwidth for this. And just saying yes to, the most critical, the most, the folks that I feel like are the ones that I want to help the most. And I have my own sort of criteria around that. A lot of it is people that I know personally or have been introduced to me very personally, or certain people who I know are very underrepresented in the tech world and would have a really tough time building connections. So, right, if you're like a San Francisco-based, white dude who has, gone to Stanford, I'm sort of like, eh, you'll be fine. You're good.
You're
Don't,
good. Yeah.
you don't need me. You're fine,
Yeah,
right?
totally.
When that's not the case, right, I try and help a little bit more.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, and I like that. I like that approach because that's also a very like, I mean, and it's very in keeping with who you are, just about being like very, very giving and, and caring about people.
And a
Yeah,
lot
I
of
mean,
it,
those are like your personal values there as well, where like you value diversity, you value, those things, and you value like those that, might need a little bit of extra help, not in a take pity way, but just in a like you deserve to have every single chance that I have as a white
exactly,
male.
exactly.
Yeah.
I'm a huge advocate for the underdog, right?
Yeah.
Like,
You are. That is
turn
true.
on sport, like a sport that
Yeah.
I don't know, and one team is, way down, and it's the near the end of the game. That's who I'm going to be cheering for, right? The one who's almost definitely going to lose, but maybe still has a chance.
Totally.
And so I think that's just embedded in who I am. The other thing I was going to say that might be useful to think about is one of the things that has been really helpful for me because I have such a big, well, opportunity with broadcast content, right? So Whiteboard Friday and blogging and also the large number of followers that I've got on like Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and stuff, Instagram, whatever. One of the things that's been really useful for me is to take the questions and problems that people come to me with individually and to say, hey, that's a great question. Look out for a Whiteboard Friday on this in the next month.
Yes.
Right. And then I'll use that. I'll take it out. I'll send it over to Michael Bird, who does the filming of Whiteboard Friday. We'll put it on the calendar and we'll make a video about that particular problem. So that instead of helping just that one person, I can help lots of people who have that same issue. And if anybody, contacts me again, I can say like, yes, I have an answer to that. Here it is.
Gotcha. Yeah, I like that. I mean, and that's in keeping with the like stuff that you create. Like, who is the one person that you're speaking to, right? Like, if I, like if I email you a question and you do a Whiteboard Friday about it, like, I'm your fan for life, A. Plus, also, like, if I have that problem, so many, there are likely a lot of others that have, that have that same problem. Like, I'm not special, right? I deal with the same problems that like other people deal with. You deal with, other people deal with the same sorts of problems that you have. So I think that's a brilliant way to go about, to go about it and building like, I mean, you've really built just like a tribe of advocates is what you have, not just like Moz advocates, but Rand advocates, which is awesome as well. And that like as an entrepreneur, that serves you well into the future, right? You've been through it once before, you're just a couple years older than me. Like you're not an old guy, like, but you have like a wealth of, I got some of that down in there too. Yeah, my wife every day is like, you got a little bit more gray there. I'm like, oh, dang it.
It's coming.
I used to actually, I used to, when I had like two or three, I'd pluck them out. And now if I did, I'd have like huge, like, holes
Gaps.
there. Yeah, gaps, that'd be awkward. But yeah, like as like, I think that's gonna serve you super well as a, like as an entrepreneur. And this is the kind of thing that I try to tell entrepreneurs as well that, come to me with questions is like I had one guy yesterday ask me, he's like, what can I be doing now as a like 23-year-old to set myself up for future success? I said, hone your craft. Like, go super deep into your craft and then teach other people your craft and build an audience. And if you can build an audience, then you can build a business. But like, you have to start there. You have to be like really good at what you're doing. And then you also have to like have, advocates, have fans.
I mean, I love that approach as well. I think the audience first, path of entrepreneurship is a really powerful one, because I think once you have connections and resonance with an audience, you often will build up the muscle to have awareness of their problems. And I think one of the biggest challenges of entrepreneurship is identifying a problem that many people actually have that is not solved yet, and then solving it in a way that is, unique and uniquely valuable from everything else. And that it seems like many, many entrepreneurs still struggle with that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Rand, I want to be respectful of your time. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat with
Yeah.
us. You know, as I said at the beginning, like you've been huge for me. Like Credo would not be where it is today without you, and Moz, you know, being willing to, you know, mention me, like that Whiteboard Friday where you mentioned me earlier this year. It
Yeah.
was just like my referral traffic just went boom. It just blew up. Like
Awesome.
it's been, and I've had multiple people be like, "Oh, Rand Fishkin has a testimonial on your homepage. Like you must be legit." I'm like, thank you, Rand." So,
No, you are legit, man. I mean, and you're helping a lot of folks, I think, with a big real problem, right? A problem that you and I have both seen many times over the years. So I
totally,
appreciate
totally.
that. And
Yeah,
yeah,
thank you.
certainly I'm happy to keep endorsing and amplifying.
Awesome. I appreciate it, man. So if you could, I mean, I bet a lot of people here already follow you on Twitter and on social media, but you know, especially moving forward as you transition into the next thing, which best of luck, by the way. I mean,
Oh,
I'm
thanks.
super stoked to see what it is, and I know it's gonna be awesome. Where can people find you online? Where's best to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so on Twitter I'm at Randfish. I pay relatively good attention to most of my mentions there. You can also reach me on LinkedIn, where I'm Rand Fishkin, and you can still email me for the next few months at rand@moz.com.